I'm Dave Haynes. Welcome to On Politics. I'll be joined today by James Causey, a columnist for the newspaper, Christian Schneider, another of our columnists, Bill Glauber, reporters covering the Feingold-Johnson campaign, and Craig Gilbert of our Washington Bureau. First, let's look at the headlines this week. The Trump campaign is shaken up again. The campaigns both come back to Wisconsin. We'll talk about the unrest last week in Milwaukee. We'll have our winners and losers and your questions. But first, let's go to Craig Gilbert of our Washington Bureau. So, Craig, a big shakeup this week in the Trump campaign. What do you think we can expect now that Steve Bannon, formerly of Breitbart, is apparently in charge?
Well, I don't think we can expect Donald Trump to soften his tone or, quote, pivot, unquote, to being a more, quote, presidential, unquote, candidate, which is what a lot of people have been waiting for, anticipating, expecting. But, you know, at every point in this process, Donald Trump has not only signaled that he wasn't interested in pivoting, but he's even ridiculed the idea of pivoting, of changing his tone, and made it clear he's not comfortable running that kind of campaign. So we can certainly expect more of the same, if not an even more kind of slashing, unbridled Donald Trump. To the frustration, I should add, of the Republican Party's sort of professional political class.
Right. And Breitbart has been fairly critical of that ruling political class, hasn't it? Paul Ryan has gotten a fair amount of criticism from them. Bill Kristol?
Yeah, I mean, Breitbart is a kind of polemical, anti-establishment, populist, disruptive kind of media force on the right that has clashed with the party establishment, certainly. And we saw this. They went after Paul Ryan promoted his opponent. And you saw Donald Trump kind of straddling that story by praising his opponent and then ultimately, seemingly in an obligatory fashion, endorsing Ryan. But there's the party. There's the split in the party. And for a state like Wisconsin, I think it has some real cross currents for Donald Trump because it's not necessarily an optimum message to Republican-based voters in Wisconsin. It does have a constituency, but, you know, again, as we've seen in the past, when you're at war with the most popular Republican politicians in the state, that there is a political price to be paid.
Mm-hmm. So one of the pieces of fallout here seems to be that Trump is going to concentrate on a handful of states. It doesn't look like, from what I've read, Wisconsin's among those states. Are we going to be seeing more of Trump and Pence, or what do you think?
Well, it's really impossible to know or say because the strategy has been so unpredictable.
It shifted
to this point. Yeah. I mean, some people have been surprised that they've been in Wisconsin as much as they have. I mean, Pence has been here multiple times. Trump has been here twice, despite the fact that the polling suggests not only that Hillary Clinton has a double-digit lead, but that there are maybe 8 or 9 states that are closer than Wisconsin is. And now they're signaling that they're going to concentrate on these 5 states. And those 5 states are good states to focus on. I mean, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Virginia. These are important states, but they're not enough. And especially if you don't win every one of them, the problem is there aren't a lot of great options when you're down 8 or 9 points in the national polls. But I really have no notion of what that means for Wisconsin, whether it just means we don't see him again and the state is conceded, or whether we do see him again because his targeting strategy is kind of bouncing around.
So you had a piece earlier this week that focused on some of the polling out of the Marquette University Law School poll that showed that Trump was really trailing how other Republicans have done with the base in the ring counties. Can you talk about that a bit, about what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, normally in Wisconsin, a Republican presidential nominee, their best area geographically in the state would be the Milwaukee media market, the part of the Milwaukee media market that's outside the very blue city of Milwaukee. So we're mostly talking about the ultra red counties of Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee, and then these other red leaning counties like Dodge, Walworth, Jefferson, and Sheboygan. that's usually the place where a Republican nominee is most popular, but that's not the pattern with Trump. In fact, he's more popular up north. He's more popular in Green Bay than he is in southeastern, in the Republican part of southeastern Wisconsin. And that is, it's great for him to run. He's running stronger up north than Mitt Romney did 4 years ago, but he's running much worse in the part of the state that supplies the most Republican votes. And so it's all, Mitt Romney did relatively well in southeastern Wisconsin, in the red part of southeastern Wisconsin, and still lost statewide by 7 points. Obviously, Mitt Romney didn't have a winning formula, but Donald Trump doesn't appear to have a winning formula if he's barely fighting Hillary Clinton to a draw in the Milwaukee media market, in the redder parts of the Milwaukee media market.
So Reince Priebus, head of the RNC from Wisconsin, got a letter this week from, I think it was 120 former and current Republican elected officials asking the RNC to essentially cut off funding to the Trump campaign. Any chance that will happen, Craig?
Well, who knows? I mean, stranger things have happened this cycle. I mean, Reince has been, the RNC has been, you know, sticking by Trump. That's what the party's role is traditionally. And I think it would take a lot for that to change. But obviously, it's a very divided party. And so Priebus has gotten criticism. The RNC has gotten criticism from people on the Trump side who say they're not doing enough. And they've been criticized by all these conservative critics of Trump who think the party is, you know, ruining itself by sticking by Trump. So that you know, is not, there's no way to split, you know, that baby. So it would still be a shock in the end unless Trump just goes completely off. To see the RNC walk away from him. I mean, they do have to worry about their candidates down ballot, but the question is, you know, does it hurt your candidates down ballot more to walk away from the nominee and feel the consequences of that on Republican turnout? Or does it hurt it more if your candidates are seen as tied and tethered to the nominee?
Yeah. Well, Craig, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, great to be with you.
Now we're going to turn to Bill Glauber, a reporter at the Journal Sentinel, and he was involved in helping to cover Donald Trump's visit this week. So, Bill, Donald Trump was back in the state. He was in West Bend. And what was his message up in West Bend the other day?
He delivered a law and order message, for one, but the second message is he made a plea for African-American votes.
In West Bend.
In West Bend, you know, Washington County has 1.2% African-Americans living in the county of the total population. It just seemed very strange. I mean, I understood the message, but the location was a little unusual, especially since he had spent a good part of the day in Milwaukee.
Right. And he did a fundraiser at the Pabst. And
no, it wasn't a fundraiser at the Pabst. He was at the Pabst in a town hall event.
That's
then
right,
he
town
did
hall
a, he did a fundraiser earlier in the day. He was also in La Crosse doing a fundraiser. Right. So there was this big push in Wisconsin, and then, bam, he changes his campaign, you know, the next day.
Right. And we may not see as much of him now if he's focusing on these four or five states that do not include Wisconsin now. But he was obviously trying to shore up some of that support in the ring counties around Milwaukee, where the MU poll, Marquette University Law School poll last week showed he had a lot of work to do.
He had a lot of work to do. He's down 15% among likely voters statewide. That's not a good position to be in. He basically united the Republican Party when he was in town here. Governor Walker finally appeared with him, first time since the general election began. He had a couple of congressmen talking for him up there. He had Reince Priebus in town. So, you know, everybody really but Paul Ryan. And then, you know, his campaign goes in another direction.
Now, Ron Johnson is in some trouble in the polls here in Wisconsin in his reelection fight with Russ Feingold for the U.S. Senate seat. Has Johnson appeared with Trump yet?
In the general election, no, he has not appeared with Trump. He's, you know, had, they do have other events to go
right.
to.
In fact, you're covering one later today.
Yeah, he's going to be at a Wiz Politics event, which he's going to be answering questions. You know, he's trying the best he can. He's trying to draw a contrast with Russ Feingold. He's down in that race. And he still faces an uphill battle. 31% of people don't know enough about him to form an opinion. according to that latest Marquette poll.
That's kind of a shocking statistic 6 years into, almost 6 years into his term. Talk about this Republican who apparently tried to infiltrate the Feingold campaign. What was that all about?
Well, apparently a young woman went to work there for the Feingold campaign, and she wasn't who she said she was. She was apparently an activist, and they found out about her and sort of drummed her out of that campaign in a day or two. You know, that sort of old style. You think of that from, like, you know, the Dick right. Tuck era of the 1960s, 1950s. Yeah. But, you know, it's an era of social media and citizen journalism. So, you know, things happen. Yeah. They caught it. And the Johnson campaign, obviously, they had nothing to do with it. That's what they said. I think people agree with that. And, you know, it's just a strange time we live in.
So in Johnson's campaign, what does Johnson's campaign need to do in order to shore up support?
Well, I don't know what they need to do, but what I do know is the difficulty he faces is with Trump hemorrhaging among Republicans, it is very difficult in this state to try to win in a split ticket race. He's mm-hmm. trying the best he can. He's polling better than Trump is, mm-hmm. but that's not enough to push him over Feingold. He's also in a presidential year where, as we know, Republicans have not won the presidential race here since 1984. If it were a close race, then he would have a real good shot. But, you know, Trump basically has to be within 100,000 or so of Clinton in this state for Johnson really to have a realistic chance of pulling in enough supporters who split their tickets. He's facing headwinds is right. basically what he's doing.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm joined now by James Causey, a columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Christian Schneider, another columnist from Madison. Chris, let me go to you first. You wrote a column this week where essentially you said, try to put yourself in the shoes of the police officer involved in the shooting that touched off the riot in Milwaukee last weekend. What were you trying to get readers to see in that column?
Well, I think when we think about the police, you know, we think of this large kind of faceless bureaucracy of people with, you know, that may have biases, may have, you know, thoughts of their own. But when it came down to it, you know, based on what Chief Flynn said, this ended up being, you know, two young men in a yard by themselves. And I think, you know, police officers, and I'm the grandson of a Milwaukee police officer for decades, you know, they're real people with real thoughts and real feelings. And so, you know, this officer who was there, you know, he had to know everything that's going on. He had to have heard Ferguson and, you know, everything that's going on. And, you know, I thought that, you know, he being African-American, maybe he was from the neighborhood. And it turns out that he actually was. And the fact that he knew, or the family is saying that he knew the young man that he shot, makes it even more heartbreaking. And so now you have this situation where you have a few seconds to react. And now you're in a situation where you may become a national name and you may not even be able to live in that neighborhood that you grew up in, you know, just because of this decision that you've made to be a police officer and, you know, to help public safety right, and things right. like that.
So, James, you also wrote a column this
yes.
week in the wake of the violence. But talk for a minute about a story we just had in the paper yesterday where this officer now has been targeted on social media. What do you think that means for what's happening in the community?
Well, it's a lot of people in pain. But one thing you can't do is make threats on social media towards this officer's life. I really feel sorry for everyone involved. I feel bad for the officer. I feel bad for the family. I feel bad that this situation had to take place. And I feel bad for Sherman Park, an area which I just live just outside of. But
and you wrote about that in your column.
I did. I touched on that in my column, how much the area has changed in this area that I've lived in for 40 years of my life. To make those kind of threats, though, it almost makes you feel, I fear for this officer's safety. I don't know if he could be an officer again because I fear that someone may do something to him.
Yeah. People have gone as far as to say, drop him. Mm-hmm. I'd like to shoot him. I mean, so you don't know how serious that is, but it is worrisome.
It's serious enough to where if this officer is even in that area again, I worry about him.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you both. Chris, I'll start with you. What, if any, political fallout might there be for Mayor Tom Barrett, for the Common Council, especially for Ashanti Hamilton, the president of the council?
You know, I honestly don't see a whole lot of fallout. I mean, we see things like this happen. They bubble up. You know, we have unrest, maybe not quite to this extent where you have, you know, buildings being burned down and cars being set on fire. But, you know, things like this happen, they calm down, and then people go right back and elect the same people who they elected in the first place. I mean, Tom Barrett, how long has he been in office? It's over 12 years now. Even though you've seen, you know, the things happen in the city that you have over the past more than a decade. So I don't know that there's really going to be that big of a political price to be had here. It would take, you know, somebody to run for office who, you know, has solutions and who has, you know, more positive things to do, I think.
Yeah. So, James, what's your take on that? And you've called for more action by city officials and state officials. What are you looking for?
Well, there's a number of things I'm looking for. First of all, there has to be a strong commitment to livable wage jobs. We have to address poverty in that area, too. But, you know, immediately, we have this gym called Century City, that's right outside Sherman Park. They just cleaned up the area to put this brand new building there. It's fantastic. That's the area that used to house thousands of workers at A.O. Smith.
Former A.O. Smith Tower site.
Yeah. And right now, it's like a hood ornament. It looks pretty, but it doesn't really add any value until you start getting people there. So over the next year or less, I want to see a firm commitment to get a real employer in that area, someone who could hire people from the neighborhood and start to address some of the issues in that neighborhood.
You know, we had an article this morning that Tom Dakin, one of our reporters, did that wrote about developments that were planned in the area, still going forward. But how does violence like this affect a developer or economic development in that area?
Well, it doesn't help. We know that. But even before this even sparked, they were having trouble filling that spot. And I just don't understand why. And now that they did all this work and development there, and they still can't fill it, it almost makes you wonder if they will ever fill it.
Okay. We'll leave that there. Let's go to our winners and losers this week. Chris, I'm going to go to you first for your winner. Who's your winner this week?
Well, my winner is actually Patrick Smith, who's the father of Savelle Smith, who gave an interview this week where he essentially took a lot of the onus for what happened on himself, saying, you know, the neighborhood needs father figures, and I wasn't there. I was, you know, out dealing drugs, and I was out pimping, and I was out doing all these things. I was in prison, and when you have a situation like that, this is kind of what happens. So he was actually showing some self-reflection, taking responsibility for what happened, and I think that's actually admirable in this instance.
Yeah, it's a powerful interview. I saw that. Who's your loser this week?
My loser is actually his sister, who was out on the streets. And look, I mean, we all understand people are emotional, people are upset, but her calls to take it to the suburbs and burn the suburbs down, which was actually subsequently reported as a call for peace later in edited interviews, certainly not helpful. And, you know, obviously everybody's emotional around there. That, you know, people are upset. But more calls for violence like that, I think, are unwarranted and, you know, possibly even criminal.
Okay. James, your loser of the week.
My loser of the week is people on social media making threats towards this police officer. Look, you just can't do that. That's a no-win situation, and it won't bring Savelle Smith back. If anything, we should wait until this video comes out and let the law take place, and then we should have discussions after that.
And who's your winner?
My winner is the community who came together after the BP was torched and after a number of fires and things like that in the neighborhood. Look, there was this one scene where we had black, white, and some Hispanic people together all praying together for healing in this community. It was young and old. It was men and women, and it was a beautiful sight to see. I want to see more of that take place, along with solutions that could fix that area.
Well, and I think you're onto something there. The fact that people went out the next morning, Sunday morning, with brooms and started cleaning up on their own in the community. People, you know, who had other things to do, came into the community to help. If there's any good to be taken from it, that was a good sign.
It's a start. It's a start.
Oh, we have a time for one question. And Chris, I'm going to throw this one to you. This is from John, who wants to know, how did GOP opposition researchers in the primaries fail to unearth all the dirt that the Dems have found on Donald Trump?
I mean, I've been talking for a full year about all the dirt on Donald. I mean, I don't know how more aggressive I could have been. It's not that we didn't know all these things about Donald Trump. It's just that people didn't seem to care. And in many cases,
yeah.
You know, he tells it like it is. And, you know, everybody's waiting for this pivot. And now the pivot seems like it's going to be more towards, you know, back to the old Donald Trump of, you know, just saying whatever he feels, insulting people and things like that. I mean, he's going to go out kind of on his own terms. So, you know, it's not that we didn't know all these things. And I think in some respects there was a period there where it was kind of fun. The media was like, can you believe this guy is actually leading? And now it's not so fun anymore. Now, you know, now things are really serious. And so, yeah, I mean, kind of the same thing that got him to where he is going to be his downfall in the end, I think.
So meet the new Donald Trump, same as the old Donald Trump.
Exactly.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Christian Schneider and Madison for joining us, James Causey with me here in the studio. And prior to that, we spoke with Craig Gilbert, our Washington Bureau Chief, and Bill Glauber. I'm Dave Haynes. I'm the opinions editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thanks for joining us on Politics.